British police say the deadly nerve agent used to attack a former Russian spy there back in March has now made two more people gravely ill. The couple suddenly fell sick Saturday in Amesbury, England, just 7 miles from where the ex-Russian agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter were poisoned. The Skripals eventually recovered. Authorities say they do not know how the couple came into contact with this poison. We're joined now by Alice Fordham, who's covering the story from London. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Elsa.
What exactly did British officials announce today?
Well, I think that what happened was that this couple fell ill on, in fact, Saturday night a few days ago. And in fact, the police in the area had released a report at the time saying that they thought they had taken contaminated illegal drugs. They actually warned people who had been taking either crack cocaine or heroin in the area to be extra careful, and said that they thought this was the cause of the illness. And then much earlier today, they said that in fact they were investigating more carefully, they were keeping an open mind, and now the Metropolitan Police say that they believe that this couple had in fact been exposed to Novichok, which was the nerve agent that was used in this little sleepy cathedral town of Salisbury earlier this year, and that it ended up causing, you know, such huge international ramifications.
Novichok. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but Novichok, that seems to be the focus here of both cases. Why is that substance so key?
Well, it's key because it's a substance that's very unusual and very unexpected in these poisoning cases. So earlier in the year, when Sergei Skripal, the defected Russian agent who was living in hiding, basically, in Salisbury and his daughter, were exposed to this substance, it was analyzed by international and by British chemical analysis, and they discovered that it was something that, you know, generally they could trace only back to Russia. It was a nerve agent. It was highly poisonous, and they believe that it had only been used by the Russians, and they believe that it was a calculated attack. And this prompted, an international diplomatic response. Like, a lot of Russian diplomats were expelled from the UK, from European countries, and from the United States.
I remember
and
that very well.
And now we're seeing it being used again, right, exactly, against two people who were apparently British, who were from the local area, who had no connection necessarily, but naturally it's caused a lot of uncertainty and concern here.
Right. Is there any sense of how this couple, these two British citizens, came into contact with the substance?
Well, no, not really. And what's happened is that the area that they were in and that they were near, there are parts of it that have been cordoned off. Now, this has caused a lot of concern in the local community because people there are concerned that this couple that apparently had no connection with this international incident were exposed to this nerve agent, have become seriously ill, are in hospital, and that it could happen to anyone. So police are seeking to reassure people, but understandably, people are concerned that this could happen to them.
All right. That's Alice Fordham in London. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
More than 500 refugees from war-torn Yemen have found themselves in an unlikely place, the tiny resort island of Jeju in South Korea. The Yemenis are hoping for asylum to stay there, but as they wait, they're catching backlash from South Koreans. NPR's Elise Hu has this story from Jeju.
On a docked fishing boat on Jeju's northwestern shore, Ebrahim Kaid calls his Korean boss Aboji, or dad. Yeah. It's a term of endearment in Korean.
I love Korea. Yeah, you love Korea, really.
Kaid found work on this 29-ton boat welding floorboards and making fixes before the ship heads back out to sea. He's doing the kind of jobs most Koreans don't want.
I was a student in Yemen, but because of the war, I need to work for help my family in Yemen.
He is one of the 561 Yemenis who arrived here since January, thanks to Jeju's policy of allowing foreign nationals to enter without having a visa in advance. They were fleeing a four-year war with no end in sight.
Because in Yemen, don't have work, don't have anything, don't have light, don't have hospital.
No lights?
No lights. For four years, don't have light.
The ongoing civil war has taken out more than infrastructure. It's killed thousands of civilians, and Yemen is teetering on the brink of famine. Another Yemeni in Jeju, Omar Al-Wahaishi, says young men are being forced to choose sides and become conscripts. To avoid that, he fled.
We said we refuse this kind of politics, that we will not go fight, we don't want to fight. And so if I go back to my city, directly I will be imprisoned or maybe executed. It's same fate, because if I go to prison, I will not get out.
He can't go home, but he and others may not get to stay either. Citizens come first. We want safety, crowds chanted in the streets of Seoul Saturday. Some 1,000 demonstrators showed up to rally against the influx of Yemenis, their arrival through South Korea into a national debate over its responsibility in the global migration crisis.
They came here without proper legal, you know, process.
Demonstrator Christopher Han says too many foreigners are getting in, despite South Korea approving less than 0.25% of asylum applications last year.
We are in the position to help them, but the truth is that, the reality is that, we have been used by them.
Protesters held up signs saying get out and calling the Yemenis fake refugees. Han says his top concern is violence against locals.
But it is all about their different idea and belief system. I mean, the Muslims, different idea and different belief system.
On June 1st, South Korean President Moon Jae-in's government ended the visa-free entrance policy for anyone from Yemen, effectively closing the border to Yemeni refugees. The ones already here are blocked from leaving Jeju Island, and 500,000 Koreans have signed a petition asking the Moon government to turn away refugees by changing policy.
I didn't expect Korea to welcome refugees with open arms, right?
Sharon Yoon is a professor of Korean studies at Seoul's Ewha University. She's not surprised, as South Korea is 96% native Korean. Until 2007, the education system taught students it was ethnically homogenous, a single-blooded nation.
Yes, there is a lot of pushback, but civil society and xenophobia is not the whole picture. The sense that, like, there is a backlash of accepting refugees all over the world, and Korea is one of those countries.
On Jeju, some Korean employers, like fishing boat owner Ishi Hyun, take a why not attitude to giving Yemenis work. If they're willing to head out to sea, I'll keep employing them, he tells us. Omar Al-Wahaishi says he's encountered only kindness from Koreans he's met. For those who are less welcoming?
I want to give them the message that we are ordinary people. We want to live in peace, we want to live in safe, and we don't want to cause any problem for anybody. So I hope they understand that we are a peaceful people.
He's now 5,000 miles away from war. His fate, like the 500 others, is in the hands of the Korean government. Elise Hugh, NPR News, Jeju, South Korea.